Wide receiver Jared Aberderis is injured again. The Wisconsin product was injured on the first day of training camp. We'll discuss his status, but first, we're joined by Chris Brown of ESPN's Grantland and author of the newly released book, The Art of Smart Football. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football, and we actually have football to talk about. Training camp is now underway as of Thursday, so plenty of talk about here on today's show. We're going to talk about the injury to Jared Aberderis and some other players a little bit later, but we're going to kick off the show with our first segment.
Expert interview.
We have ESPN Grantland's Chris Brown joining us for an interview. This was a pre-recorded interview recorded yesterday. But Brown is the author of the newly released book, The Art of Smart Football. The second in a series. The first book was The Essential Smart Football, after the release of which we also had him on Railbird Central. That was a few years ago. We're glad to have him back on. Talk a lot of football. There's an entire chapter devoted to Aaron Rodgers and his development, and so a lot of it has to do with Mike McCarthy as well. So we're going to talk to him a lot about Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. And Chris Brown is just a wealth of knowledge when it comes to the X's and O's of the game. And what he does best, I think, is maybe places it in context better than anybody else out there. The kind of history of how things developed and you know, people's personal histories and where how they learn schemes and X's and O's and all those kind of things. So enjoy the interview. All right, here it is. Chris Brown of ESPN's Grantland and author of The Art of Smart Football. Right now on Railbird Central, we're joined by Chris Brown, author of the newly released book, The Art of Smart Football. Mr. Brown, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Really excited to be on.
We're glad to have you. The second time we've had you on, the first time after the release of your first book, so glad for a follow-up here. Now, one of the chapters in your new book is titled Creating the New Joe Cool, a reference to Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers and his similarity to Joe Montana. I think Packers fans would like to think they have the best quarterback in NFL history. But is it simply going to take more Super Bowl titles for Aaron Rodgers to be considered in Joe Montana territory?
Probably. Though that is probably an unfair criterion, and you know, stat heads and analysts and everybody always, you know, like, why are quarterback wins the number one criteria? It's sort of just an inevitable fact of fandom of the league and the way it works is that your team has to win, and your team has to get lucky, and because winning a Super Bowl takes some luck, and you can have a couple of bad bounces. Even if you know there's numerous examples of the best team not winning a Super Bowl. That's why one of the features of having a single elimination playoff. It's not designed to the March Madness is not designed to crown the best basketball team. It's designed to be an exciting tournament, and the same thing in the NFL. So that's probably inevitable. But I do think that if Rodgers can continue on his current path, he will be up there in that discussion of top quarterbacks of all time. And at that point, you know, it's hard to ask for much more. And that doesn't. And part of the thing that him being sort of a Joe Cool type, but any comparison to Joe Montana is a little bit unfair to anybody who hasn't finished their career. But is you kind of get the impression that it won't bother him too much. Now, it will bother him to not win, but in terms of just my legacy, I don't get the impression that he's that worried about it from that perspective.
Comparing Aaron Rodgers and Joe Montana as players, is it because of the West Coast offense and they both won a Super Bowl that they're compared, or do you see similarities between them from a kind of a form and technique standpoint?
I think it's the latter. I mean, it's really the whole package is what's fun, and one of the fun parts of the piece is, and what sort of ties it together is Mike McCarthy, one of his really, I think his first job in the NFL was as quarterback coach with the Kansas City Chiefs, where his pupil was a very veteran Joe Montana. So then sort of drawing the line, and he actually learned in many ways a lot about coaching quarterbacks from his player, Joe Montana, that then he then applied to developing quarterbacks. And then that's sort of the quarterback school that Aaron was able to go through. But in a lot of ways, I think they're very similar players. I mean, the West Coast offense requires, the quick drops, quick decisions, a lot of the accurate throws to guys on the run. Both of those guys had had incredible feet. I think underrated feet in the pocket, not necessarily just to scramble, but to just move around in the pocket or to kind of move the pocket in subtle ways. And then you get into the accuracy and then the intelligence aspects of it. Obviously, you look at it, Rodgers has more physical tools than Joe Montana did. It's actually, in terms of being a physical specimen, I mean, Rodgers isn't, a huge build guy, but he's tall. He's got an amazing arm, and his ability to throw the ball from really strange angles and on the move and everything, he's really just sort of gape at it. But the other reason that I made the comparison was really on-field demeanor. I mean, Tom Brady is going through many of his own issues right now, but he was sort of got some of those comparisons early on, especially being a California guy, because especially his career was sort of being steely on the field. But in recent years, he's very animated on the field. He's yelling at players. He's sort of becoming more like, I would say how Peyton Manning is. And I don't think from a playing style, you really compare Peyton Manning and Joe Montana. Obviously both are incredible quarterbacks, but just playing a little different. Whereas Rodgers sort of has that sort of, California, relaxed kind of approach to the game. Obviously, he gave the whole relaxed speech last year. And then, I got some stuff from, Jeff Tedford's question, the way he, inspires teammates, but not really in a big sort of, rah, 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 high school Harry kind of stuff. It's just sort of acquired confidence and making jokes and relaxing people so they can focus on the task at hand. It's just sort of what you see a lot there. And, I mean, I kind of drew on Mike McCarthy's the guy who really made the comparison. So it got me thinking there.
I think that leads us into a good discussion here. I think there's a segment of people out there that don't want to give Mike McCarthy too much credit because Aaron Rodgers is kind of his only success story, kind of making the argument that by the time he worked with Joe Montana and Brett Favre, they were already late in their career and already established. And the other quarterbacks McCarthy has worked with, kind of the backups pack with the Packers, Graham Harrell, B.J. Coleman, Brian Brum. A lot of these guys haven't panned out. So how much of a quarterback guru is Mike McCarthy?
It's a good question. I will say a guy who probably owes Mike McCarthy maybe even more money than his agent would be Matt Flynn. I think Matt Flynn came out financially pretty good from working with Mike McCarthy. But it's a fair question, and it's throughout football history you run interesting little dynamics where it's player coach, and very often you need both guys. It takes two to tango, and you need the right situation. I mean, Rodgers has talked about if he'd been in a different situation.
Chris, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay, we lost you for 1 second, but you sound good now. Go ahead, keep going.
Sure. So you look at Steve. No, it's fine. I don't know. You look at Steve Young, who started his career with Tampa Bay and then spent some time in the USFL. Really struggled, struggling at Tampa Bay on a bad team until he got to, the 49ers and got to work with Bill Walsh. So it's hard to know when you have these relationships, which is a lot of ways what football is about. I do think it's hard to avoid the conclusion, though, that McCarthy is an excellent coach, at least in sort of what he does and the way he set the team up. And you look at the parts around Rodgers, and obviously helped by having a great quarterback, but, you know, they've had a really flux offensive line for years. They've had just a pipeline of receivers who've come in, and each one has produced and developed and turned into a legitimate guy. And they've had some sustained success. And actually, you know, they won the Super Bowl, but they've arguably been even better in a couple of the other years. I do think it's also, to digress quickly, it's hard to evaluate NFL coaches or just coaches in general. And I think, to me, I've got kind of a mental framework that I use where it's sort of a cascade of criteria, the first of which is very obvious of how successful DeBeer is an organization, which is acquiring talent, which obviously in Green Bay, that's not directly McCarthy's job. But then the second one is to develop the talent. And the third is to scheme X's and O's, game plan to put the players in position to succeed. And then the fourth is sort of these in-game decisions. And I think probably the area that McCarthy is weakest with some of those in-game decisions, the fourth downs, the punts, some of those things that have burned the Packers before, which I would put that as the least important criteria, except in those close games where that's the difference between winning and losing. But the upshot being, I think McCarthy does an excellent job of developing the players, and then also, you know, game planning, scheming, and I'll just mean drawing up plays, but just really thinking about how can you use your players and make them successful. And I think he does an excellent job. I think he obviously needs to improve, and I think that's what some of the stuff about play calling is, to get better at the game decisions. Because when those go wrong, they're very glaring, and fans point at it. And then, as you say, you look at, you know, you got Aaron Rodgers, you know, how dumb do you have to tell you? I mean, Mike, along with the rest of the coaching staff, has been crucial to his development.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you bring that up in light of the, you know, kind of McCarthy giving up those play calling duties, maybe kind of recognizing that is his weakest, you know, area and trying to improve it, so to speak. Another thing I'm just curious about, do we call this Packers offense Mike McCarthy runs a West Coast offense, or is this kind of becoming outdated now? What do I call this?
You know, the football nomenclature game is always tricky. I mean, you know, some of those words have to some extent lost really any meaning, and people use them in various ways to either fit whatever argument they're making, or they just are not helpful descriptive. Especially when you think about, you know, people talk about pro style offense or a spread offense. You know, the NFL, the number one personnel group is 11 personnel, 3 receivers and a tight end. By far, and then I think the quarterbacks, I have to double check the statistics, I think it's like 65%, if not more, for quarterbacks being in the shotgun. So they're in a shotgun spread formation, but that's pro style. So it's hard to say. I do think, though, with McCarthy, you could definitely say there's a West Coast basis for it, and I'm sure I talk about this in the piece. Because of his upbringing, he really steeped himself in what those West Coast guys were doing in the 90s. That was why he went with Paul Hackett to Kansas City to run that version of the West Coast offense. And that's really what he grew out of. But it is interesting that, to credit McCarthy and the rest of the staff and also Rodgers' ability to do it, they've embraced some of these more modern concepts. We talk about package plays, which we can get into, or just spread concepts, or just other things that other NFL teams are using and making multiple and in some ways amorphous and adaptable to whatever they're facing on a week-to-week basis, which I think gives a credit to those guys. They're not just stuck trying to run the 19. They're doing a lot of West Coast things, and they're a West Coast basis for it, but then, you know, trying to apply the new ideas.
One of the other chapters in your book focuses on packaged plays, and while it's not really a Packers-centric, I do think it's something the Packers run quite often and with a good degree of success. For our listeners who maybe have seen package plays but didn't really know what to call them or know what the term is, can you kind of explain it and its evolution in today's game?
Sure. It's funny that as football ideas come up or trends come around, people tend to you know, something will come up in the TV guys and says, oh, this is new. But almost always there's some historical precedent. Like 30 years ago or 50 years ago or 6 years ago, people were doing something like this. This is just a new version of it. This stuff is actually pretty new. I mean, I can't really find too many examples going back historically. The concept is, and it's fairly broad, but there's an angle of it too that's very new, which is that a package play, meaning you've packaged different kinds of plays together, typically without having to call audibles. Like, it's not the quarterback going to the line and saying, I'm going to check between four plays. So there's no need to call any audible. It's just up to the quarterback to make a correct decision. So a typical example would be where there's a running play going, meaning that the offensive line, as far as they're concerned, they're blocking zone blocking play or a power play, and the running back is just ready to kick the ball. Meanwhile, receivers are running either screens or some sort of pass route. Now, this basic concept has been going on for a long time, usually with running plays combined with receiver screens. You know, even go back to Purdue with Drew Brees, they were bubble screens with the run plays. The thing that's really pretty new is that there's these package plays, and the Packers are the first guys to use this. They also, the other thing, you can combine screen passes with downfield passes or things like that. And again, the Packers were one of the first NFL teams I saw doing it. And that's really pretty new. I saw it doing it, and then by then you saw Packers one of the first ones to really sprinkle it in, and then in the last couple of years you've seen a ton of some of you used to say a chip in Philadelphia. The Steelers do that a lot, Patriots do, and it's really interesting stuff. And like a zone read or a read option play, you have a run play going, and the offensive line is blocking, and then the quarterback is reading a defender to determine whether to hit off or keep it himself. These plays are kind of like read option football, but with quarterbacks who can't run the ball, or you don't want them running the ball, and instead of running, you want them doing what you pay them to do, which is throw the ball. So he'll read a defender, but instead of doing it to keep the ball and maybe getting hit or blasted by a linebacker or defensive end, he's reading a defender, and then if the defender commits to the run, he could throw a screen pass or a hitch pass or a quick post or something like that to take advantage of that vacated space. And the idea is it's just controlling the arithmetic game between offense and defense. There's 11 guys on defense and 11 guys on offense, but there's always a defensive counterpart for the ball carrier. And then if the quarterback hands the ball off and watches the play like a Dan Marino type, the defense has two guys you can't account for. So this is a way to control and make sure that weak side linebacker or weak side safety who you can't block has to sit there and on a pass of the red or some kind of slant or something in the backside, which then takes the defender out from stopping the run play. So there's fascinating stuff, and you'll see more and more of it. The thing you got to watch out is linemen getting downfield, but the thing I think coaches realized a few years ago, defensive coaches certainly have realized this, and they complain in some cases justifiably that linemen are getting downfield in these plays, but it's not that you have to be behind the line. In college, you get 3 yards on a pass play, so you can complete a downfield pass. The lineman can be 3 yards downfield. But in the NFL, it's one, which actually gives you a lot of leeway if you're running an outside run or a very quick hitter. Linemen, they can be engaged and just block like normal as long as the quarterback doesn't hold on to the ball and let a lineman leak downfield. So it'll be fascinating to see. The Packers do a great job of it, and I think you'll see even more of it next year.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us today. Before we let you go, what is the preferred method of purchasing your book, The Art of Smart Football?
It's really whatever method that folks out there think they might enjoy the most. You can find it on Amazon.com. It's The Art of Smart Football. It's available in paperback and Kindle. Should be available at Barnes & Noble soon. And, whatever way that people think that they like to read books. So either works for me. You can also find me on Twitter at SmartFootball, and really enjoy being on.
Sounds good. We'll send people your way. We'll send them to go get the book. And, again, thanks for joining us, Chris.
Hey, thanks, Ron.
Thank you to Chris Brown of Smart Football, The Art of Smart Football, a newly released book. However you prefer to read books, whether it's electronically or you want to get a hard copy, you can get it pretty much anyway. Go check it out. Just Google it online. Follow him at Smart Football. Apologize. I'm sure you could tell the phone call got a little bit garbled. We were using a Skype line. And that kind of results in that happening. Like I said, folks, for the next about 2 weeks, you kind of got to bear with me a little bit here. I'm in a temporary studio, and I kind of use the term studio loosely. I'm in my in-law's basement currently. No cell phone reception. Have to use a Skype line. Gets a little bit garbled like that. The quality of the phone call started out great. Kind of, you know, in and out a little bit at the end. I apologize, but still great to hear from Chris Brown. He's just a wealth of knowledge, as you can tell. He knows his stuff. So wanted to get that up regardless because, you know, 90% of the interview was very good quality. Hopefully we're doing well right now. And let's continue on with the next segment.
Packers news of the day.
Jared Abradaris was injured on the first day of training camp practice in Green Bay. News emerged on Thursday in the midst of practice that he dropped out and was being driven from the field back inside the stadium. Pardon me. And thoughts immediately went to his surgically repaired knee, or that's at, you know, first thing that came to my mind. Abradaris tore his ACL in training camp last season. During his press conference, Mike McCarthy said Abradaris injured. He didn't think Abradaris injured his knee, hypothesizing that it could be his tailbone. Abradaris apparently fell on a pass pattern during practice. So if there's a silver lining, it's that it's the injury doesn't appear to be to his knee, but we still don't know the extent of his injury. Mike McCarthy said, you know, yesterday in the immediate aftermath of practice that he was being evaluated. Now, typically tailbones are bruised. I rarely hear about them being broken. So again, you know, if there's any good news to come out of this, it's not like he probably re-torn his ACL. I mean, nothing's been confirmed yet, but it's not looking that way. Now, if Jared Abradaris misses a few days of practice, I'm not going to kill his chances of making the roster, but, you know, it's certainly not good that first day of practice, he's back on the sidelines, especially after, you know, so much that happened to him last year, the setback that he kind of incurred. And now, you know, just when he's getting healthy again, to be injured again. And I don't know, it could be something minor where he's just out a day or two. And if that's the case, I mean, great. I mean, and I tend to think, you know, if it does happen to be a tailbone, it, you know, really, no big deal. You know, he'll come back from that and be just fine. Now I asked people on Twitter before the show, well, what do you think Abradaris's level of security is after yesterday's injury? And here's what Packer Nation had to say. Here's an interesting response. Steve Miracle says, what roster security? Rob in Wisconsin on Twitter says, it's falling fast if he can't practice. It's 75% right now, but goes down 5% each day he's not out there. So you know, obviously some people, you know, not feeling good about Abradaris's chances. Earthquake 320 on Twitter says, if he thought he was on the bubble before, definitely not good. There's too much talent at wide receiver. But you know, while there's a segment of people that think, you know, Abradaris is, you know, his time's getting close to being up, here's the opposite view. Samuel Shear on Twitter says, I think it's high. The Packers love to give players a few seasons to see what they've got. I say an 80% chance he makes it. And you know what? I can see what Samuel Shear is saying there, because, I mean, maybe Jared Abradaris' chances of making the 53-man roster aren't really all that great. But if we throw the practice squad in there and we kind of, you know, we take a look at 63 players, you know, there's a decent chance that Jared Abradaris, you know, he still has that practice squad eligibility. They, if they don't feel as if he's ready yet, they could put him on the practice squad and give him yet another season. And that would be a way of keeping him around, developing him, and see what they still got in Jared Aberderis. That could happen. Now, I mean, if it's to the point where Jared Aberderis is just like, I'm fed up with the injuries and I'm retiring, well, I mean, that's his choice. But again, we're still kind of waiting to hear on the extent of the injury. We're just going on, you know, what people saw on the practice field and Mike McCarthy's, you know, one or two sentences of comments afterwards. Nobody really has the full story yet on what happened. But, you know, like I said, I think if it is indeed a tailbone, probably not too serious. So everybody can kind of keep their fingers crossed that nothing too big is happening here, and he'll be back within a matter of days, if nothing else. In other injury news, the Packers placed four players on various injured lists before the start of training camp. Rookie Quentin Rollins was placed on the NFI list. That's the non-football injury list, meaning that his injury didn't happen while with the Packers. Rollins reportedly pulled a hamstring working out on his own. And again, if you're looking for a silver lining, it's that it happened now and not in the middle of the season. Now, there's been no timetable for return, and the Packers obviously are being cautious here. They've had a lot of hamstring injuries in the past, notably to fellow cornerback Casey Hayward, which kind of lingered for more than a year. Now it would be nice to see Quentin Rollins return in time for family night. I think, you know, when all of a sudden there's a television audience, watching along, but there's no guarantees there. The Packers are going to err on the side of caution and just make sure he's fully healthy before putting him out there. And once he is, he'll be back. And who knows, maybe, you know, it'd be nice if he's there for the start of the preseason and he can play in all four games and gain that experience. But again, we just don't know at this point. But, Quentin Rollins is making the Packers 53-man roster. They're not going to cut a second-round draft choice. So that isn't even an option. It's just a matter of, is he going to be healthy enough to play this year? And is he good enough to actually help the Packers, or a guy who just kind of, you know, sits on the sidelines his rookie year in the NFL? We'll find out more. But again, you know, good thing that it happened now and not in the middle of the season. So hopefully Quentin Rollins just gets healthy in short order. The Packers also placed three players on the PUP list, highlighted by linebacker Mike Neal, a seemingly annual occurrence where Mike Neal starts off the season on some sort of injury list. And yes, while Neal has a history of being injured, I tend to give him a break these days after back-to-back seasons of playing in all 16 games. Mike Neal's first three seasons in the NFL were really injury-plagued, but the past 2 years, he's been healthy. He's been healthy enough to play. If he's been injured, he's fought through it for each of the past two seasons, played in every game. So I give him a lot of credit for that, for kind of going from oft injured to playing through injury if he's, you know, had him the past few years, which he kind of has. Mike McCarthy said he didn't expect Neal out to be long, so hopefully that's the case. Now Neal missed the entire offseason program, so it's not like this is a new injury. He's been dealing with it, and it was reported by Bob McGinn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that he underwent surgery in the offseason to repair a hernia. This just kind of coming out yesterday. This is the first I'm hearing of that. So the surgery part of it. So that's kind of interesting, considering Neal's been out so long, that surgery took place in the off season. He's had months to heal. It's probably rather accurate that he's probably not going to be out long. If he misses a few practices, he even misses a few weeks of training camp, you know, this is Mike Neal's sixth year in the NFL. That's not going to kill his chances of making the roster. But you just want to see him come back. And once he is back, now stay healthy. That's going to be the key for Mike Neal. The others listed on the PUP list are a pair of rookies, running back John Crockett and wide receiver Ricky Collins. Kind of interesting. I was there. I saw John Crockett injure his ankle back during minicamp. This happened in June, so that was over a month ago. I would have thought by now, John Crockett would be fine and he'd be ready to practice after more than a month after a sprained ankle. It didn't look bad. He was able to get up under his own power and walk off the field. So, I mean, I don't mean to minimize any injury, but it didn't look bad at the time. So hopefully John Crockett's close to returning. The injury to wide receiver Ricky Collins has never been disclosed that I've seen. Still kind of waiting to see what that happens. For all these guys, missing a few practices, not a big deal, especially at the beginning of camp. Just hopefully they're all back soon. And, you know, if we're going to talk, you know, all the news has been about injuries so far, just because, you know, eve of training camp, they place these guys on these lists. It's kind of the big story. But, you know, if we're going to talk about kind of one non-injury thing, one very positive thing, I'll say it's this. Yesterday at training camp, first day, kind of I thought the biggest story, non-injury story, was Nate Palmer. Now, outside linebacker Clay Matthews is kind of playing inside. He's playing outside, and he's probably playing more inside than outside. But when he is lining up at outside linebacker, replacing him in the Packers lineup with the first string defense, according to reporters who were there yesterday, was third year player Nate Palmer, who really is kind of an anonymous kind of guy. He's been with the Packers for the past two seasons. He spent last year on injured reserve, so he played a little bit his rookie year, kind of got a cup of coffee in the NFL, but has not made much of an impact whatsoever. So, you know, he's not a name kind of guy where people just know off the top of their head. So I was kind of surprised to see him working with the first string offense when Clay Matthews was lining up at outside linebacker. So that's really good news for Nate Palmer. You could probably make the argument that doesn't say much for both rookie Jake Ryan and linebacker Carl Bradford, who was the fourth round draft choice last year. I won't get into that too much yet, seeing it was just the first day of practice. I mean, the Packers have to pick somebody to put there on the first day, and who knows? If Jake Ryan impresses, if Carl Bradford impresses within a few days, it could be them working with the first string defense. But hey, good for Nate Palmer. Congratulations to him for you know, kind of carving out a role with the first string defense early in training camp. We don't know a whole lot. You know, is he good enough to stick there? You'll remember Nate Palmer is the latest in a long line of Packers players making the transition from outside linebacker to inside linebacker. They've done this in recent years with Rob Francois, with Jamari Lattimore, with Brad Jones, with Carl Bradford. It seems to be they try these guys out at inside linebacker or outside. When it doesn't work, they shift them inside. Doing the same with Nate Palmer. The exact same scenario as Carl Bradford last year. They spend all training camp or all of training camp with the exception of the last week and the outside. Things don't go all that well. So the very last week of training camp, for the last preseason game, they shift him inside. And both Bradford and Palmer played on the inside. Palmer gets injured in the last preseason game, spends the year in injured reserve. So, you know, they're making their way through this transition of positions. But the only thing we can go by yesterday, he's healthy, working with the first string. Good job to Nate Palmer. You're kind of the best positive news of the day. But let's move on here with the next segment.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, on Friday, training camp practice is happening as we speak. And I guess, by the way, just before we came on air, I saw the latest news. Rookie offensive lineman Matt Rotheram dropped out of practice today. That's kind of disappointing news, seeing as, you know, he apparently practiced yesterday, didn't drop out, so it kind of came as a surprise. Here's a guy who fought through whatever issue he was dealing with yesterday. Well, I don't know. Maybe he's sick, for all I know. I don't know. We'll find out more after practice. But, you know, seeing as they weren't even in pads yesterday, you're kind of like, come on, you know, like, I can understand once they put the pads on people getting injured, but, you know, let's get through this period here of a few days with as few injuries as possible. So anyway, we kind of wait to see what happened to him, and we'll find out more after practice. After practice today on Friday, the Packers kind of are holding these back to football events. There's kind of this campaign they call Back to Football, and happens across the NFL. But on Friday night, the Packers hold their 1K kids run, in which they kids run, you know, 1,000 meters, including a lap around Lambeau Field. Then that's followed by movie night at Lambeau Field. They're playing the movie Frozen on the Tundra Vision Jumbotron screens inside the movie, inside the stadium. That starts at 7:00 p.m. Kids run at 6 p.m. So you know, if you're in Green Bay, you've traveled to training camp. Lots of events for the family, especially the kids, this Friday night. And then, things continue tomorrow. The third of three straight days of practice on Saturday. And Saturday represents the first day in pads. So they kind of ease back into things the first 2 days. And then finally, you start to see some hitting, some tackling on Saturday. So that's kind of, you know, represents a big step forward in their progression as they, you know, open training camp here the 2015 season. Then Saturday night, the Packers hold their annual 5K run at Lambeau Field for adults. You know, Friday night's the kids run. Saturday night, the big 5K adult run. Again, people do a lap around Lambeau Field. They've been doing this, I think this is like the fourth or fifth year or something like that. And they get thousands of people to do this. It's kind of cool. It's, you know, it's awesome. Hey, the Packers host this kind of thing. Just kind of, you know, celebrating the open of training camp, the return of football in Green Bay. So really cool. If you're in the area, I encourage you to do it. Go check it out. And all these things happening. We, of course, on the show focused on, you know, what's happening on the field. So by the time we have our next episode on Monday, we'll talk about what happens today. We'll talk about what happens on Saturday when the pads come on. Just shorts and helmets today, and there's only so much information you can get. But, you know, especially, you know, what you can tell a whole lot more about the action that happens in the trenches, especially the offense and defensive linemen. You know, when they're not wearing pads, it's not like you give everyone the benefit of the doubt, and it's like you can really start evaluating players when the pads come on, especially defensive players too, when see how they're tackling. Are they missing tackles, things like that? So that'll be all really cool to check out, talk about on Monday. Packers have a day off Sunday after three straight days of practice, return on Monday. So we'll be having another edition of the show live as practice is taking place. So we'll talk more then. We already have a guest lined up for Monday. We're going to have Virginia Tech Associate AD Pete Morris on the show, and that's probably not a name that comes to, you know, the tips of people's tongues, or you may not know Pete Morris, but what's interesting is, first of all, he's a Wisconsin native, but second of all, he worked for, before he got into college football, or college athletics in general, he worked in, and it's different, NFL PR departments, and he was with the Kansas City Chiefs when Mike McCarthy was an assistant coach there. So I'm really excited to pick his brain about Mike McCarthy back before he became a head coach, what he thought about him then, you know, but this back in the 90s. So how has Mike McCarthy changed since his days as an assistant, kind of an anonymous assistant at the time? And it kind of piggybacks on our conversation today with Chris Brown, who talked about Mike McCarthy, you know, back when he was Joe Montana's position coach. So that's going to kind of seg very smoothly into Monday's discussion. So excited for that. We'll see you on Monday, folks, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Podcasted later in the day on demand. My call to action, if you've not done so, please give us a rating on iTunes. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywalls. One small thing we ask of you, give us a rating. Helps us get word out about the show. So thanks a lot, folks. We'll see you Monday. I leave you today with a song called Texas Town by Honky Tonk Home Slice on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go Pack. Go.